Hi, this is Susan Moser with Cherry Becker, along with my partner, John Carpenter. We thought we'd spend a few minutes today talking about ESOPs for government contractors. We often get asked a lot of questions from a lot of our clients about ESOPs, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about ESOPs. ESOPs can be a great thing for certain companies under certain situations, so we thought we'd spend a few minutes today just talking about them. So John is going to cover some good reasons why ESOPs make sense, top five reasons. We're going to talk about some of the challenges with ESOPs, and we're going to talk about some of the myths with ESOPs.
We'll be debunking myths today, Susan.
All right. So before we do that, just a couple of basics about ESOPs so that you know the framework. So I'll say here's the ESOPs 101. So what a lot of people don't know is ESOPs are governed by ERISA, which is under the Department of Labor. If you think about a 401k plan, the Department of Labor has interest in 401k plans, which generally are eligible. There's certain requirements to make them eligible to most employees. So ESOPs are covered in that. They're essentially a retirement plan. ESOP trusts are established for the benefit of employees. A couple other things, just basic stock price. The stock price is established at the beginning of an ESOP by an independent valuation, and every year after that, it has to be independently valued, the company's stock. Employees that participate in ESOPs have company shares that are allocated to their ESOP accounts without making out-of-pocket contributions. So if you think of a 401k plan, you make contributions, you might select a couple of different mutual funds. In this case, with an ESOP, your contributions are going into company shares of stock. Shares of ESOPs are normally allocated to employee accounts based on W-2 compensation, again, similar to a 401k plan. Currently, shareholders can sell all or part of their shares to an ESOP. There's no requirement for a minimum number of shares or the timing of a sale. So that's just some basic things. So now I'm going to ask John to talk a little bit about what are some of the top reasons why an ESOP might make sense to some companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And over the years, we've had a number of clients that put ESOP plans in place, and we have a number of clients today that are ESOP-owned companies, either fully or partially. So what are some of the main reasons why companies put an ESOP in place? Well, probably number one is it gives a chance for the owners of a closely held business to get some liquidity. It could be an exit strategy, or maybe it's just a strategy for them to take money off the table, so to speak, and continue their career with the company. Second biggest reason is that if an ESOP is done right, if it's communicated correctly, it really should be a way to increase productivity and employee engagement. Your employees become either the full or partial owners of the company, and we want them to act like owners. We want them to really embrace the concept and help grow the company with the same vigor that an owner would. Thirdly, tax advantages. We don't have enough to, we could spend an hour today talking about the tax advantages.
We're not going
to
do that, but
no,
we could.
We could. But there are tremendous tax advantages, potentially for the current owners who are selling their stock if they structure it correctly, and going forward for the company after closing. Fourthly, and key to government contractors, is that contributions to the ESOP plan, whether they are used to allocate shares to the employee account or even used for debt retirement, those contributions are fully allowable under the FAR. Companies, this is like a fringe, this is part of your fringe pool. And so to the extent you have cost reimbursable contracts, here's a way to basically get the government to reimburse you for the cost of the ESOP. And lastly, ESOPs really are pretty flexible in how they're structured. They can be structured with outside debt, without outside debt, combination of bank debt and seller notes. And as we alluded to earlier, there's really no requirement as to how many or what percentage of the stock has to be sold to the ESOP.
Yep. And John, over the years, as you mentioned, we've had quite a number of clients become ESOP. Some initially, maybe 30% of the company is an ESOP, and then over time they become 100% ESOP owned. There's been a couple of very large ESOP employee-owned government contractors, including SAIC. A lot of people don't may not remember that now, but SAIC is probably one of the most successful ESOP companies around, and it was obviously a very large company.
And one of the first to
before it went public.
Right. Did it before it was cool.
Yes. So let's talk now about some of the issues and the challenges with becoming an ESOP.
And there are some. And kind of my top five list. Number one, communication, communication, communication. ESOP, the ESOP structure needs to be communicated to the employees, and the employees really need to see the value in an ESOP. They need to embrace it, and that's not done through a quick email. It's done through some fairly intense communication and discussion with employees. Secondly, I'd say I've often heard clients say, well, this is a little bit of a socialistic kind of plan, isn't it? That I can't exclude people in one year or another because they maybe were poor performers that year. Well, that's true. You can design the vesting criteria. There is some flexibility there, but once your plan is in place, eligible employees can't be excluded just because they had a bad year.
And I think, so going back to similar to a 401k, generally it's available to all eligible employees. And you can set those criteria, meaning all full-time,
right,
and subject to a vesting. But there is a lot of misconception about that it, you know, you can pick and choose who you want to participate. You can have an employee, you can have an employee stock plan, which is not an ESOP, where you can pick and choose. But those are
right,
two very different things.
Exactly. Third, ESOPs really need careful planning, especially up front, but on an ongoing basis as well. There's a lot of planning has to go into the design of the ESOP plan. There's planning that needs to go into how you're going to do your valuation annually of the stock. And because those employee owners one day will either retire, leave the company, or heaven forbid, die or become disabled, their stock has to be repurchased. It does not have to be repurchased all at once, but it does have to be repurchased. So there is a long-term repurchase obligation in an ESOP that has to be accounted for and planned for. We always caution people, ESOPs are not free to put in place and not free to administer.
Which the best things in life are not free, right?
Absolutely. The valuation has to be done every year by an outside third party. If you have 100 or more participants in the ESOP plan, just like a 401k, you've got to get an audit of the plan, and there's some plan administration expenses. So consequently, we often say, you know, ESOPs are probably not appropriate for really small companies. And how small is too small? Well, that's pretty hard to say, but probably, you know, any company that's maybe under 10 million should really think about it, maybe even a little more than that.
Yep. And one of the things that you mentioned about the having the audit, I mentioned earlier that an ESOP trust is established. So one of the things that the Department of Labor is interested in is you want to make sure with an ESOP, because it is essentially a retirement plan, and if you think back to many years ago, Enron, that was not an ESOP, but the employees were, their retirement plan contributions were made with company stock. And so the reason that there are a lot of rules around this, and there is a trust, an ESOP trust, that is really responsible for overlooking the ESOP on behalf of the employees, is really to protect the employees. So there are some rules and there are some, you know, requirements that are important to be followed.
Absolutely. And I'd say lastly, just as a general observation, ESOPs typically work really well with growing companies. Companies that are either highly cyclical or companies that go through a downturn, especially if it's a serious downturn, there can be issues with the ESOP, because typically when that happens, the valuation of the stock goes down, employees get disgruntled, they begin to wonder whether this was such a good idea or not. So again, planning up front is key.
Yep. So John, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the myths? So as we mentioned, there's a lot of misunderstanding about what an ESOP is and is not. So talk about some of those sort of common questions and sort of things that we hear from clients when they're thinking about ESOPs and wondering about them.
Yep, and you and I have fielded all of these. Like, number one, you can't sell an ESOP company. Not true. You can absolutely sell an ESOP-owned company. The plan, unless you're selling to another ESOP company, the plan has to be terminated upon sale. But that's, as long as you're selling for a decent price, that's really not a big deal.
And I can think of a very large client of ours in the past year that was partially ESOP-owned and had a very very successful sale of the company, and it really wasn't a factor.
Absolutely. I'd say myth number two, people say, oh, does this mean I can't fire any employees? No, you hire and fire the same way you always have done. Maybe myth number three, is it all or nothing? I'm either all in or all out, 100% ESOP or 0% ESOP. We've already hopefully made clear, not the case. You can be anywhere from 1 to 100% ESOP. We hear, oh, if I go ESOP, that means I can never attract outside investors, private equity capital, anything like that. Not true. Is it perhaps a little trickier than if you were not ESOP? I'd say a little trickier, but not prohibitive at all. And lastly, we've sometimes heard people say, oh, ESOP, does that mean the employees are running the company, like the inmates running the asylum? No.
Well, hopefully you don't think of your employees as being inmates, and hopefully they don't think of that either.
Hopefully not. When an ESOP's put in place, you definitely need an active board of directors, but management may largely remain the same, depending on how you're going to structure the ESOP. And at the end of the day, the board is responsible for running the company, and management, you design the management team as you see fit.
Yeah. So one of the things that you mentioned at the beginning was thinking about it as an employee intent, or retention and engagement, a good solution. So think about this scenario, and we recently had a client that they were actually evaluating sort of two paths. They were contemplating potentially selling the company, and they were also evaluating becoming an ESOP. And they actually went and did sort of follow two parallel paths. So they did research. They looked at both scenarios. They had a lot of advice and counsel. With a lot of transactions, you typically, management tries to keep the information initially limited to a few people. But, you know, like a lot of things, when companies sell, eventually the word sort of leaks out when people see lots of meetings and that type of thing. And so for this particular company, they, again, evaluated both options, but ultimately decided that they thought the ESOP was the best route for the existing shareholders, but really for their employees. They felt good about the management. They felt good about the growth trajectory for the company. And they really did view it as something that their employees would be very excited and engaged about. When they made the announcement, they had a company gathering, and they carefully planned the communication and explaining what it was. And so all of the employees sitting in the room were fully expecting them to say that they were selling the company. And so when they didn't say that, and they explained that they were going to become, this particular company did become 100% ESOP on day one, it was pretty amazing the comments and the excitement by the employees. They were sort of prepared for we're going to sell the company. And instead, they said, we're going to create an ESOP 100%, and all of you will become participants in that. And it really was a great thing for both the owners and for the management team and the employees. So ESOPs, again, not for everyone, but hopefully this brief little introductory session was helpful for any of you that are sort of thinking about an ESOP or wondering how they work. If you'd like more information on that, and obviously there's a lot that does go into it. Certainly there are lots of tax considerations and some, again, some really great reasons for that. Be sure and follow up with myself, Susan Moser, or John Carpenter, or any number of our other folks in our government contracts practice.
Exactly.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.